Hello, everyone out there in podcast world. We are back for another episode of Between the Reels. This is Casey.
And this is Devin.
And we are here to bring you the movie news, reviews, and from the vault. So get excited. Let's kick this thing off. To begin today, we have a exciting or disappointing bit of news. We have learned that Ghostbusters 3 is supposed to begin shooting.
I'm going to say that's disappointing news.
Yeah, and the biggest reason why, like, don't get me wrong, I'm all for a Ghostbusters 3. Loved the original Ghostbusters. Well, second Ghostbusters, yeah, it wasn't the best, but
it still has a special place in my heart, though.
Absolutely. But this is what it says. The official press release, they were talking to Ivan Reitman about another upcoming film. And they mentioned that Paramount chose not to start shooting it in the small window they had before he was expected to finally start shooting Ghostbusters 3 reboot next summer without Bill Murray.
Which I think that's the biggest problem is you don't have Bill Murray. I doubt Rick Moranis will come out of retirement to join the cast as well.
Not if Bill Murray's not going to be there.
Yeah, it's just, it would have been fun maybe to have it with the whole crew there, but there's no reason why this movie needs to be made if you know the original people.
No, and this has had so many troubles from the beginning. Bill Murray just has had no interest. I mean, he's read a couple of drafts of the script, but it's not, nothing's been able to convince him that this is the right thing to do. And now they've just given up even trying to get him and are just trying to go it without him. And that's, nobody wants to see that.
Well, that's like having the original Star Wars with no Han Solo. I mean, you just don't do it. So,
and even though it was definitely a buddy movie, it was set up to be an ensemble cast, but let's be honest, Bill Murray was the Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what's interesting is he's refusing to go with it because I don't know if you ever played the Ghostbusters video game that came out.
Absolutely fantastic.
Oh, it's incredible. And Bill Murray was one of the voices in it. You know, they had original cast with the original lineup, and it was a great game. And for me, that's kind of my Ghostbusters 3. It was a great great callback. It was especially if you play for the Wii, how the Wii remote, the actors, your pack and everything. So let that be the nostalgia factor for all the fans. We don't need to make this movie.
Yeah, and if they're willing to all get together for something like that, the fact that any of them are willing to hold out for a movie means there's probably something bad in the script that is not going to be redeemed by not including Bill Murray.
Exactly. So maybe people are excited, but I'm disappointed.
No. My condolences to anyone who loved the Ghostbusters. Next up, this is a brief bit of news, but absolutely fantastic. Last week, the movie Argo was released, directed by Ben Affleck. It's getting great reviews, but it's based off a true story, mostly. And in this movie, they set up a fake production company in order to try to produce a fake movie to get hostages out of Iran, back in 1976?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, late 70s. And when they set up this production company, they did such a good job, people started sending spec scripts to this production company in order to try and get them made. And one of the names that was dropped who actually sent a script to them is none other than Steven Spielberg.
When you can fool that man, that's a pretty good alibi. So
yeah, and it's not like he was an unknown at the time. He'd rapped on Jaws. He'd rapped on Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So he was really starting to get real street credit. But I guess he was just wanted to make sure he kept eating and wanted to cover all his bases. So he sent something. They did. They don't say what it was or what it was about or anything like that. But they found that he did send a script in, which is absolutely fantastic.
Well, I heard also people discussing that it might have been E.T. that he sent in, so
and that would have made it even better.
Yeah.
They should have just taken the production company and just went ahead and made it. The government could have been sitting on millions. But I guess with Area 51, I mean, it's...
Yeah, exactly.
That's the last thing they need. All right. Now we are on to the best part of the evening, superhero news.
Oh, yeah.
We have a bit of casting that's been listed. Is they're still rounding out the cast for the sequels to The Amazing Spider-Man that came out earlier this year. Trying to lock down... I can't think of the girl's name who plays Gwen Stacy.
Oh, you're talking about Emma Stone.
Emma Stone. Trying to lock her down to officially be in the sequels. They went ahead and announced the casting of Shailene Woodley, I'm not super familiar with her. I know she was in The Descendants with George Clooney that came out last year. And she's done a few other things. But, you know, not a household name by any means at this point. But they went ahead and casted her as
Mary Jane
Watson, previously played by Kirsten Dunst, for the upcoming Amazing Spider-Man sequels. But what really makes this article very interesting, and a bit of a spoiler, is at the very end of this article by The Hollywood Reporter, it mentions specifically that her role in the first Spider-Man sequel, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, is going to be a rather minimal role. Become Spider-Man 3, it's going to get heavily increased as they work out the storyline that's the death of Gwen Stacy. So you get a bit of a spoiler of what's going to become the fate of Emma Stone.
Which I think is actually, I kind of like the fact that they're doing that. And I wonder if Mark Miller, actually no, Mark Miller was Fox, never mind. But I am glad that Sony is trying to stay more true to the Spider-Man story arcs and whatnot. So it'll be very interesting, the fact if Gwen Stacy dies in the second one, which I know a lot of people were expecting anyway, and some people were guessing that's maybe why the discussion between Emma Stone and Sony took so long, because maybe she was trying to vie for it to be in the third movie or whatnot, because, again, when you're in a franchise like that, you kind of want to milk it for all it's worth.
It's a steady paycheck.
Yeah, every actor needs to put food on the table or, you know, live in their mansion. So, but I am glad they're doing that. The fact they are doing the Gwen and then the Mary Jane, because I think that's what makes Parker so, or the Spider-Man character so interesting, is the fact that, you know, he failed to save Gwen Stacy and then moved on to Mary Jane as well. I mean, I don't know if you ever read Spider-Man Blue before.
I haven't. Spider-Man is not someone I know a whole, other than the films, there's not much I know about actual Spider-Man.
Well, Spider-Man Blue was written by Jeff. It was done by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, the guys who did Long Halloween, Dark Victory, Haunted Night.
Yeah.
And so what they did was they did a couple of the Marvel characters, Hulk Gray, Spider-Man Blue, Daredevil Yellow, which for anyone who's not read those, I'd highly recommend them. They're some of my favorite Marvel books. But Spider-Man Blue is basically Peter Parker and him talking to a tape recorder about his story meeting Gwen Stacy and how they almost didn't get together because of Mary Jane. So it was something that, and I loved it. I mean, it was one of my favorite comics I've ever read. So the fact that they are doing something with that, I think is very exciting.
Yeah. And I think it'll be interesting to see when Gwen Stacy dies, how they use that to affect the relationship with Mary Jane.
Mm-hmm.
As far as telling her what his role is, that he's Spider-Man, and you know, what kind of different shape that will take in that relationship versus his relationship with Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, so you know, kudos to Sony for doing that. See if they said Amazing Spider-Man wasn't really my favorite comic book movie, but it does have potential. So I'm hoping that this story arc will be better than the first movie. So.
Yeah. To go with the casting news, we also have release date information. There's now an almost official release date for Ant-Man, everyone's favorite superhero, Ant-Man. If you can't feel the sarcasm in my voice, I'll go ahead and tell you, it's Ant-Man.
You probably, just like Conan alone, we probably like lost half of our listeners, so we're offended.
I apologize if you're an Ant-Man fan and I just offended you. And I hope I get proven wrong by the Ant-Man movie. But right now my expectations are awfully low because it's Ant-Man.
But again, I mean, the director, he's done some great movies. I mean, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World was incredible. It was so much better than I expected it to be. So if there's anyone who can pull it off, it's this guy, but... But yeah, we'll see.
There's hope. There's a lot of reasons to like it. So
yeah.
It's not a lost cause. But it's got an official release date for November 6th, 2015. Yeah, so this is awfully far in the future. Kind of continues Marvel's trend of releasing about two movies per year. But what makes this really interesting, and something I didn't realize the first time I read through, is The Avengers 2 is actually slated for a May 2015 release. So they're either going to, one, take the opportunity to use The Avengers 2 to introduce him and then give him his solo film later that summer, or he's just going to come out of nowhere in late 2015. So it'll be interesting to see how he actually plays in the larger story as we get closer to the Avengers 2.
I think he's probably going to be introduced in the Avengers 2 and then have a solo movie, just because so many Marvel fans were mad that he wasn't in the original Avengers movie. And then stiff the fans by not having the second Avengers movie. I think that'd be a really stupid play on Marvel's part. I think they're going to use the Avengers to introduce him and then have a solo movie out.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I don't know why they'd stiff Marvel fans who've been wanting an Ant-Man movie for so long and wanting him in the Avengers to being like, hey, suckers, you know. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
But what also adds a little extra air to this is there's been talk of it beginning shooting as soon as this coming spring, or even a little before, somewhere right around the end of Thor and before Captain America 2 gets going, which could, in reality, significantly move up the release date. And previously, Kevin Feige, the head over there of the Marvel Studios, had previously talked about possibly releasing 3 movies in 1 year, which means they still have that potential where they could bring Captain America, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Ant-Man all out in 2014 before hitting Avengers 2 come 2015. So that still remains as an option if things pull together.
Interesting. Yeah, that'd be really interesting to see if they do that.
Yeah.
Man, Marvel will be making a ton of money.
That will be a good summer for them. But then you're left with the Avengers 2 as the only release for 2015.
True, true.
So we'll hang in there and we'll see what happens. And to continue with Marvel news, we got this week the official synopsis for Thor 2, The Dark World. We don't know a whole lot of details on this. It's one of the films that's been kept quite under wraps. I mean, Captain America 2, Winter Soldier, if you've read the comic books, you have a pretty good idea of what's going to take place.
Oh, exactly.
You'll adjust things, obviously, for what happened in the first one, but for the most part, it's going to be a pretty set story, which is great, because it's a great story to be based off of. But Thor, The Dark World is a little... You know, since it doesn't have a specific comic that it's coming from, we've been left a little more in the dark compared to some of the others. So this is the official press release synopsis that Marvel gave. It said, Thor the Dark World continues the big screen adventures of Thor, the mighty Avenger, as he battles to save Earth and all 9 realms from a shadowy enemy that predates the universe itself. In the aftermath of Marvel's Thor and Marvel's The Avengers, Thor fights to restore order across the cosmos, but an ancient race led by the vengeful Malekith returns to plunge the universe back into darkness. Faced with an enemy that even Odin and Asgard cannot withstand, Thor must embark on the most perilous and personal journey yet, one that will reunite him with Jane Foster and force him to sacrifice everything to save us all. So it's about as detail-filled as any official synopsis that comes out. But the few things you can definitely pull from it, one, we're going to be going to some crazy places. It talks specifically about all 9 realms, so hopefully there's going to be some inter-realm travel where you can see what else exists out there in the universe.
Well, again, I think what's going to be so great about this movie is the fact that, kind of what we talked about with the last podcast when Darren guested, was how Marvel has been able to create this whole universe, this entire world, and I think what's going to really show that is going to be Thor. The fact that, you know, because every other movie is going to happen here on Earth, except for Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, yeah, happening here on Earth, but then you have Guardians of the Galaxy, and this is going to really show how extensive the universe, the Marvel world, really is. So I'm extremely excited. The fact you have the Dark Elves, you might potentially involve numerous realms. So I think I'm really looking forward to Thor. So
yeah, I mean, like we've talked about several times, Thor was one of my favorites of the previous Marvel films. And like you said, you know, we have this scope of the Marvel Universe, and it's about to expand drastically in where it can go. And since Thor will probably be the lead-in for Guardians of the Galaxy, it makes sense that you're going to see this larger world and then find out that the Guardians of the Galaxy are there to help protect. And who knows, maybe they'll even be introduced in Thor 2.
Yeah.
There's always that potential lead-in, or at least in the button that precedes follows every Marvel movie that's out there.
Which, of course, after the Avengers, I wonder if they're going to have two now. You know, mid-credits and credits, so we'll see.
What new food can they be eating at the end of the movie? Which, you know, seeing what food is out there in the other realms is not a bad idea. Now, the bit of disappointing news in it, and this is just a personal thing, is he does have to save Jane Foster, so it means Natalie Portman will be back. Which, I don't hate Natalie Portman, but she was definitely my least favorite part of Thor.
Yeah, just... Basically, the only reason why she was a part of it was just to have some romantic interest.
Exactly. And if anything, that hurt the movie more than anything else.
Yeah, it just wasn't really needed. It was just kind of, well, every movie's got to have romantic interest, so we're going to throw it in there. And I don't know. I mean, I guess she's the reason why he has to keep on coming back to Earth, but you know, have that connection, that link.
That's true. I mean, without her, he maybe he wouldn't even care as much if the Earth is being attacked.
Exactly. So, but anyway... All right, well, I got some continuing on to the Marvel news. I got a few bits myself, at least comic book news. First off, as we talked about last week, there's been stickers posted around New York saying basically that Agent Coulson is alive. And it turns out that is indeed true. What happened was we had New York Comic Con, which explains why the stickers were in New York.
Yep.
Basically, Joss Whedon... announced via video message, as well as Kevin Feige, that Agent Coulson would be back in a big way for the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. Basically, Feige said that there was never going to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. show without Agent Phil Coulson. And Whedon adding, said he's heading the S.H.I.E.L.D. show and always was. So it looks like they had this from the very beginning. That's what he says. And knowing Joss Whedon, I'm guessing that's true, that he basically was always meant to be alive. But I don't know how they're going to pull it off.
No, I mean, really, it gives you two options. Either one, it takes place before the Avengers, because then he isn't dead. Or two, he didn't die in the Avengers.
Yeah. Basically, Agent Fury, that sly dog, threw him in the medical unit or something like that. I don't know what happened, but all I can say is this. For all of the people who complained at the end of The Dark Knight Rises, which, spoiler alert, but again, if you haven't seen this movie... It's your own fault.
Exactly. If you haven't seen it by now, you deserve to have it spoiled.
Yeah. The fact that, and I know this is in dispute, but the fact that Bruce Wayne, according to some interpretation as well as my interpretation as well, that he did not die.
Right.
So, and again, they at least had some type of, there wasn't exact, you know, they left room, that wiggle room for you to believe that.
Yeah.
But Agent Coulson, you know, so fans who complain about that, you can't really complain about the Avengers and, you know, about that anymore, because the Avengers now did jump the shark just as much as Dark Knight Rises did.
Oh, yeah.
And if not more so.
Exactly. And it wasn't for story purpose, at least not that we were able to find out yet. So there's no longer a leg to stand on in that regard.
Yeah.
Now, something that adds a little credence to it is at the beginning of the Avengers, the last time I watched it, they specifically mentioned life model decoys, which, if you're familiar with the comic books, more or less are realistic automatons that take the place of individuals. Nick Fury used them all the time. So it's possible that they will use that to work into the larger picture.
That could be true. So, but either way, I'm excited about Agent Coulson being back. I loved Agent Coulson. I think what better person to have him head the S.H.I.E.L.D. show than Agent Coulson?
Oh, absolutely. Clark Gregg, fantastic actor. And he deserves to be there.
Oh, exactly. So I think that's great news. Moving on as well, some other comic book news, which is interesting. So, also Mark Miller basically has been headed up the Fox portion of the Marvel division. And over Fox, and he actually had some interesting things to say as well. Basically, he was recently stated in an interview with SFX saying that they want to build a cohesive universe, and then he said, I personally like this to work in complement to the Marvel one. It would be cool if these universes don't contradict each other, so if you went to see Spidey, the Avengers, the X-Men, etc., as a viewer, you would have no idea that all three are coming from different studios. I love to make it look like they're all just happening in one place. And he said, so basically it's interesting because it seems like that Miller, I mean, I don't know if Marvel's on board on this, but it seems like they're trying to, obviously when they saw how well the Avengers did, I think the success of the Avengers revolutionized everything, because now you see Fox and I bet Sony will jump on board to like, hey, we own these different rights, let's just have it all work together and expand the universe more. And so I think this potentially could be a great thing. As long as the studios are able to work together, because just having Whedon and Mark Miller and whatnot say they want to work together, is very different than the studios. You know, whenever you get studios involved, it just creates more problems.
Exactly. When money's involved, it's a whole separate issue. But Marvel has been very much into the fans, what the fans want, trying to bring them. So if they're still willing to listen, I think the fans would be completely in favor of this.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping the universes, you know, in the same rough idea, even if they never cross over, you at least see that that potential is there.
Yeah.
There's an opening.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, as you said, Marvel has been so good about listening to the fans and staying true to the fans. I think the issue is going to be Fox here. As long as Fox realizes that's what the success was, not just jumping on the coattails of Marvel's success, but realizing what the formula they use and jumping on that formula, then I think this will work really well. So it's just going to take. I think Marvel definitely has the upper hand on this. So, and the fact that they have Mark Miller, I think, shows that okay, we need to do something. You know, this is what works.
They're starting to take it seriously.
Yeah. So. So again, I think there'd be some great potential there, and to have X-Men and I guess Fantastic Four. I haven't heard anything about Daredevil, whether Marvel bought the rights to Daredevil yet.
Yeah, they were supposed to get them back, I guess, sometime this month.
Yeah.
Since no movie's in production.
So I haven't seen anything whether that happened yet. So possibly Daredevil will be in the same world as well if they don't sell those rights. So
yeah.
There's huge potential with that. Moving on as well, this is actually, I think, great news. But it's more bad news for RoboCop, which has now been bumped to 2014. And honestly, I just don't know why they're still making this movie. I'm hoping that they just bump it down the road, eventually just die. I mean, the director hates this movie. He basically complains about it. The fans don't want it. I mean, when you see signs from the movie basically saying, we don't want robots or robots aren't human or something like that. It's supposed to be a plot of the movie, but then it reflects the sentiment of everyone else who, waiting for this movie.
Yeah.
That's just all bad. There's nothing good coming out of this movie. I mean, even the costume people don't like it at all.
Oh, yeah. If you look at the set pictures, it's just, it's horrible.
Yeah. And it looks like a cheap thing of Pacific Rim meets Batman.
Yeah. That's exactly what it looks like.
So, keep on bumping it down the road. We don't need to watch this movie. So even if it's bad news for the studios and whatnot, I'm excited.
Straight to DVD would not be a bad option. We can pretend it didn't exist.
Oh, and whenever the director's not happy with it, his heart's not in it, so you know it's going to be a crappy movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can't think of a single movie where the director hated it, what he was doing, and it ended up good.
It's true.
So there's that. This is something I'm also really, really excited about. I don't know if anyone else is, but basically, they've been working on a biopic for Freddie Mercury for a long time with Sacha Baron Cohen to play Freddie Mercury, and the Queen's guitarist Brian May recently confirmed on his website that they now set up a shooting schedule. And I don't think they have a director yet, but it shows like it's moving forward. And said, I'm a huge Queen fan. As a musician, Freddie Mercury is basically, for me, the top singer of all time. So the fact they are doing this, Freddie Mercury had such a unique life. I'm very excited about this. And to have Sacha Baron Cohen, who resembles Freddie Mercury really well, but also the fact that the guy can sing. I mean, I didn't realize how good of a singer he was until I saw Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
And what he did with that, I figured, okay, if there's anyone who can play Freddie Mercury, it's this guy, because he has uncanny resemblance. He has that quirky personality that Freddie Mercury had, at least on stage, and, he can sing. So I think... I'm very excited to see where this goes. But it looks like it could be released early in 2014.
Yeah,
so.
Now, I'm not a fan of Sacha Baron Cohen. I mean, he's done very little that I've enjoyed. Bruno was ridiculous.
Borat.
I mean, it's ridiculous stuff. I mean, he's not...
Ali G is pretty funny with the NBA stuff.
It's true. Well, but, I mean, and this is where I kick myself. But even in these movies that I hate and are horrible, he does them well. He does characters well. He's a very committed actor, if nothing else. So, I mean, even if you're not a fan of him, I think he'll be able to pull it off and probably in spectacular fashion.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, even if you don't like his characters or his movies, you just look at Hugo and you look at Sweeney Todd, and he did an incredible job in those movies.
It's true. You put him in a role that isn't bad, and he excels every time.
I mean, he's a very gifted actor. Instead, Hugo wasn't a big thing. I mean, he was just a crazy... he was this very intense, officer at the train station. But you know, he pulled off that character so well, where you felt awful for this guy, even though he was kind of a jerk in the movie. You know, at the very end, you were very excited that he finally, you know, got together with that girl. So I think for anybody who could pull it off, because he's such a quirky, you know, actor, for Freddie Mercury, I think it'd be him. So now moving on, the last bit of news. This, I'm going to combine this, but basically Transformer news. Transformers 4 recently on Spoiler TV. It sounds like that they're going to do something different with Michael Bay. What he's going to do is, they stated that there's going to be a new female lead that they're looking for, who is a high school senior and her boyfriend is a Texas racing driver. This just screams awfulness. But again, Michael Bay, when anything female Michael Bay, you're not going to have anything except for big breasts and, you know, eye candy.
Exactly. A cardboard box is going to be able to do a better job. Megan Fox.
Yeah. I mean, if there's anyone who just basically who screams, let's objectify women, it's Michael Bay.
Absolutely.
So, and a Texas racing driver, how... that's going to be a great character. I mean, I'm thinking twin robots right here, Transformers 2. So let's see if he can salt anyone else now.
Why not? It's worth a shot. Because you can imagine being from Texas, the stereotypes that he'll get to pull in with this one.
It'll be more like we were watching Talladega Nights or something like that. So. Yeah,
exactly. Now, being Transformers and being Michael Bay, already I was unexcited for yet another one. But this just made it that much worse. Although, not having Shia LaBeouf may be the greatest thing that this film has going for it.
That's like plus 10 points right there. So.
Exactly. So unless they replace it with like Kristen Stewart, I think we're in good shape.
Yeah. And what's funny, but speaking of Michael Bay, we recently had this spitting match between Hugo Weaving and Michael Bay. Basically, Hugo was talking about, recently an interview, basically saying, you know, they asked about his role with Megatron. Now he said he didn't really know what he was doing. It's just a 2-hour stint. He wasn't really committed to the role. He hasn't been asked to do it again. Basically, he kind of said, I just went in and did it. He didn't feel very committed to the role or immersed in the role. And it sounded like it was the way when he was Red Skull in the Captain America. Turns out Michael Bay didn't like that. So he sent his own response via his website, which he then took off. So maybe his little blogger's remorse right there. But his response was, do you ever get sick of actors that make $50 million a picture or even $200,000 for voiceover work that took a brisk 1 hour and 43 minutes to complete and then complain about their jobs? And basically went on to say, with all the problems going on in the world, how can they really be complaining because something isn't artistic or fulfilling enough? Basically saying, screw you, Hugo. And reading this, you know, I kind of see where both are coming from here. As much as I hate Michael Bay, I could kind of see why he was saying that, because Hugo, again, I would love to do 2 hours of voiceover work for $200,000.
Absolutely. I can't complain about that.
Yeah. And to sit there and just kind of be like, oh, it was one of my lesser roles, you know. It's like, really, come on. But at the same time, why else can you say that? Because if you're not committed to it, you're not committed to it.
Exactly. It's not like he trashed the movie or said that Michael Bay was horrible. He said he never even met Michael Bay in person, to talk to him over the computer a couple times, and spent 2 hours doing a voiceover work. For him, it just wasn't important on his radar.
Yeah, so exactly.
I can see why you're offended, but he's not trash and you get over it.
Yeah. He was basically just commenting on his lesser... I mean, every actor probably has their movies that they're not as committed to. So, but that's it with our news section. Now on to our movie review.
Our movie review for this week, we are going to be reviewing Sinister. Now, Sinister, we'll go ahead and read the synopsis. A found footage helps a true crime author realize how and why a family was murdered in his new home, though his discoveries put his entire family in the path of a supernatural entity.
Dun, dun, dun.
Sounds exciting, right?
Oh, yeah.
Stars Ethan Hawke, Juliet Rylan, and even a poignant yet mostly meaningless... role for Fred Thompson. Being from Tennessee, you have to know Fred Thompson and love Fred Thompson. Directed by Scott Dickerson, who did The Exorcism of Emily Rose, The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is not something that's going to help him.
Yeah.
And then this.
Everyone has their moments.
Exactly. We've all made mistakes. So overall, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
So what was it about, I mean, compared to other horror movies, is it kind of fit that same, you know, kind of been there, done that, or does it bring something new to the table?
I'm not going to say that it completely brought anything new to the table. A lot of the film, if you're one of those people who likes to kind of guess what's going to happen as you go along, you can pretty much piece the story together pretty well as it flows. It's not like it's keeping anything held back where there's going to be a super large surprise and twist. Mm-hmm. If you don't figure out what's going on, you're either not trying or just not very good at it. But the atmosphere is what makes this movie. I mean, it's got your jump scare, so if that's your thing, you like being things popping out at you and freaking you out, you're going to have plenty of those. And they use most of them pretty well, some just to get the cheap scare. But what makes them so effective is just the feel, the atmosphere of the movie. Very subdued soundtrack for the most part. There are a few times where the soundtrack kicks in and tips off the scares as they're coming, so it kind of pulls you out of the film in that way. But for the most part, the atmosphere just keeps you drawn in, keeps you on edge, and gets your leg pumping, your palms sweating, and gets you incredibly excited. As far as the story itself, kind of a retread of other horror films that you've seen. Scary Demon, Haunting a Family. But it has enough to keep you guessing to try and figure out why. It uses some very clever ideas to mask plot holes, which I thought was great that they actually took the time and the effort to do that. Some of them feel a little cheap, but the fact they at least addressed why some of the stuff is not there, I think is better than nothing.
Interesting. And so what about the fact, because it seems like with horror movies, we have either the found footage or just the haunted house. And so did you think it worked well, the fact they kind of combined the two, because it's about a guy who finds footage?
Exactly. I think that, because I'm not a huge fan of found footage.
That's getting really old now.
Exactly. I think when it first came out, you know, with the original Blair Witch Project and then with the Paranormal Activity, it was great. They were well spaced apart. Each time it felt new and unique, but by this point, everything feels like a retread, just about. So I was a little weary when I read the found footage part, but it's used very effectively. It's used to push the story forward. It's used to reveal each of the murders that takes place. And give you clues for what's coming next in the story. And then, as far as the rest of the film, the fact that it pulls you out, and it makes a very clear distinction, since it's all the found footage is shot on Super 8 cameras, there's a very clear distinction of when you're in when you're in now in the actual story and when you're watching the previous events. So the fact that they draw such a clear distinction in some points makes it feel like two separate movies in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like smaller movies within a movie where you're looking what's going to happen next. Because you know something's bad coming. Because it always comes in the smaller films. So you're looking for where's it going to come, how's it going to come. And it helps keep you drawn in to the larger story as a whole.
Right, so basically it kind of works out to his advantage then.
Yeah. Ethan Hawke does a great job, I think. To me, he's always a relatively consistent actor. I mean, he's not going to phone it in. He may not be Denzel Washington or the greatest actor alive, but he gives a solid performance. The wife and the kids, who horribly underserved, I mean, they're there because they have to be there. They don't really put, I mean, they give exposition, they push the story forward, but beyond that, there's really not much that they do.
Yeah, it seems much more focused on Ethan Hawke's character.
Exactly. You know, kind of draws you into his world as he's trying to write his true crime novel.
Mm-hmm.
And builds everything around that. And it does a fantastic job of keeping you sucked into the story in most instances, and feel for him and also wonder, why is he being so stupid?
The don't go in there type thing.
Exactly. And, you know, sitting in the theater, there's people a couple seats over screaming, don't go in there, don't go up there. And by that point, you're just like, come on now. There's no better way to ruin tension in a horror movie than having somebody a couple seats over start screaming.
It's like being in a haunted house, you know. So then, would you say, you know, again, would you see it? Would you recommend streaming it or skip it?
Now, the biggest weak point for the movie was by far the last 20 minutes. They present a great story that holds strong through the whole movie, as you get toward the end, you start to see things kind of unravel a little bit and really understand where it's going. And it kind of makes it the weakest of all sections. But I think even at its weakest, it's better than a lot of current horror movies. So I would say see it, but maybe as a matinee. You know, don't pay the full $10 price, but if you get the matinee discount, we could do it for $5 to $7. I think it's worth that money.
And yeah, that seems to, for me, that's the problem with horror movies, is the third act, they just, there's such a fine balance between, you know, going big and making it work, and then going so big, we're just like, okay, the whole thing just derailed, you know? And it seems like so many horror movies suffer from that. And this is too bad that Sinister kind of has that same problem, it seems like, so.
It's true, and I think a lot of horror movies, especially recently, that's kind of the unfortunate boat that they're in.
Yeah.
It's tough to pull off a satisfying ending.
Oh, exactly, so.
So, well, that wraps up our review for Sinister. We'll move on now to our From the Vault section, where we'll be reviewing Insidious.
All right, so From the Vault, said the kind of since we reviewed Sinister, we thought we would actually discuss Insidious, because even though it's a newer movie, I think it just came out last year, maybe 2 years ago.
2010, I think.
That's right. So a couple years ago. Not a lot of people watched it, and so we thought, well, let's check this out to recommend whether this is one that should be viewing, especially because it is on Netflix right now and Halloween and whatnot. And, you know, I would say, you know, after watching this movie, I thought it was a great horror flick. You know, it said at the very what we just talked about was Sinister, where things get too big at the very end, the third act. I thought this did a great job of balancing that, where it had a very unique way of how it went big, but it didn't derail at all. It kept me very interested, and you know, the ending, you know, because every horror movie has their little kind of twist. I thought the twist of this one. You know, I thought in my mind, like, oh, I can see where it's going to go with this, and it didn't happen. I thought it was a pretty, very unique twist, which I really enjoyed. So, you know, I thought this was a great, I thought it was a great horror movie, so.
Yeah, very much like Sinister, there's jump scares there, but what really draws you in this one is the atmosphere. It's very much an atmosphere horror movie. Kind of keeps you wondering what's going to come next. There's so many potential directions at one time that they could bring stuff in. That you're always wondering, you're always guessing, and always on the edge of your seat.
Well, exactly, because it's interesting the fact of how you have these certain people that, you know, the horror aspects of it, or the you know, the ghosts or whatnot. I thought it was really cool how they played with that, and how, you know, it's not your typical haunted house. The way they have that twist as well, I thought was very interesting, and I thought was very clever. So
yeah, like you just said, it's a unique haunted house story that's completely separate from a haunted house story.
Yeah. And so I would say if you know, especially it being on Netflix or anything like that, you know, and for those of you who, you know, may not like the gore fest or the harder horror movies, you know, it's, you know, it's PG-13. So
you can sit down with your wife, with your girlfriend, with teenage children,
yeah,
and you're not going to have to worry about anything drastically horrible happening to me. There's no decapitations or anything like that, so you're pretty much safe there. You can watch it with your mom and dad, still be okay.
Oh, exactly. So, you know, I would say, again, the fact that it's on Netflix, I would definitely say it is worth, you know, putting in your instant queue, you know, for Halloween, if you want something that's scary. So it's not one of those movies either there where when you finish it, you're going to just end up completely just either traumatized or just, because, you know, disturbed afterwards. It gives you enough scares, enough thrills, but at the end of the day, you realize, you know, it's not going to, it makes you think, but in a good way. You know, you're not just, you know, I'm not going to be sitting there with a flashlight on tonight, so.
No, there's probably not going to be any nightmares because of this movie, but
yeah.
You still feel satisfied.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely much more the more satisfying movies that I've seen, and I'm sad that I did not watch in the theaters.
Now, if you had to pick a weak spot for the film, what do you think it would be?
You know, I would say the weak spot of the film, you know, that's an interesting question. I would say the weak spot of the film would probably just kind of the same thing with Sinister was the was the family members, not necessarily was Sinister. You know, you had Edgar Wright being strong, and then the mother and child being weak. I thought in this one, there was the father, the husband, that was a little more frustrating to deal with.
Yeah, which and I love Patrick Wilson.
He
does a great job. But yeah, he's difficult, and he kind of falls into that stereotype of the unbelieving spouse.
Yeah, and then the way when he finally believes, it's just kind of like, really? You didn't notice that earlier?
With all of the things you've been through to this point, it takes somebody talking to you to change your mind?
Because the thing is, like, events happen that any rational human being would say, okay, something weird's going on. If someone comes to my home and tries ulterior method, I'd be like, hey, you know what? Let's do it. Because there's bloody handprints on the bed sheets. Like, something's going on here.
Exactly. Worst case scenario is it works.
So it wasn't the actor. It was his character that I thought was weak and very frustrating.
Yeah.
But again, at the very end, though, the way that they utilized his character, I thought was very neat.
Exactly. They were able to tie it back into other parts of the story, which was smart, and it worked well. And I think, personally, I think the third act was by far the weakest of the whole movie. It wasn't bad by any means, but it was definitely the weakest of the three. But the very end itself, I think, strengthens the rest of the third act.
Oh, exactly. So yeah, again, if you're on Netflix, I would definitely say check it out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even if you're at Walmart and you find it in the bin, go ahead and bin it. I don't think you'll go wrong. You can watch this every two or three Halloweens.
And exactly. And so if you're a horror fan, it's definitely worth putting in your box.
Absolutely.
So, well, that wraps it up for our podcast. So until next time, this is Devin.
This is Casey.
And happy viewing.
Between the Reels is produced under Creative Commons license. Bumper music provided by Kevin MacLeod.
We'll see you next week.